Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 135. Today my guest is Don Averly, and Don is the used equipment manager. Head used equipment manager for Titan Machinery. Does that sound right? All right, sounds good. So I've known Don for a while now, a couple years now. I met Don a while back at a meeting, and we've been kind of bouncing stuff back and forth from each other for a while. And I'm a firm believer in contacts, and especially in this business, you know, when you've got used equipment stuff going on, as many off-color guys that you can have that's not in your wheelhouse normally, you know, and me being a John Deere guy, Titan being and Don being a red guy, it's good to have that correlation between each other. So when I get a red piece, I can bounce it off of him, and vice versa. So Don, welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey Casey, I appreciate you having me. And you're right, I do appreciate having contacts that are, as you put, off color. it's important in this industry. I mean, it's too small of an industry. We all need to be helping each other out rather than beating each other over the head every day.
Yep. Yeah. That's there's a little truth to that statement. A little bit of a truth to that statement. So
there's the dollars are too. There's too much dollars at stake with some of the values of this equipment.
That's for sure, man. There's a you can wrap up a few dollars pretty quick, and just not too many pieces of equipment. So
yeah, that would be correct. Sort of like a planter that I asked you about the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, there's especially those things, man. I tell you what, you miss on those by much, and you sunk your ship, man.
I hear you, man.
Okay. Well, I wish I'd have had you on when there was more to talk about. There's not very much stuff going on in the market right now.
You know, there just isn't. You know, it's kind of no excitement, nothing going on with tariffs, nothing going on with our president, equipment flying off the shelves. I mean, there's just nothing going on.
It's just too easy right now, right?
I go back to an article you wrote a while back. There is no easy button. It's never easy in this industry. But the beautiful part about this industry is, gosh darn, if it was easy, everybody would do it, right?
That's right. That's exactly right.
A lot of stuff going. A lot of stuff going on. What do you think?
A lot of stuff going on.
What do you think about this? Our favorite topic of the last few days.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. You hear the tariff thing come back and forth, and you know, I'm not saying that. When I say this, I said this a couple times, and I'm not saying this with any kind of like I'm trying to pass fault or anything like that. But I tell you what, if you take a look at the market right now, and let's just say we didn't have any tariffs at all, let's just say it wasn't even happening, and that wasn't a factor in the marketplace, we have nine times the amount of beans that we would normally have in carryout. We have now corn, on the other hand, is one of those ones that's starting to reverse, where our corn consumption is actually starting to catch up
with
supply.
Yeah.
You know, so that's taking off. But you know, cattle market through this whole tariff thing has done fine. I mean, I'm not saying it's done fine. I don't want to sit here and pretend like paint some rosy picture, but it's been. It had more wins than losses, let's put it that way. The hog market, I mean, I tell you what, I just feel for the hog producer. I don't think they've had a chance to really ever kind of catch their breath since the 90s when they were giving hogs away for free alongside the road. But,
I think that hog thing, though, with the old China thing, I think we'll finally see a little bit of light.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to see a chance for that, a little bit of rebound there. But, you know, Trump came out yesterday and said, well, the last 2 weeks he's had a couple of conversations where one revolved around, you know what, we're going to go ahead and get these tariffs back up and going. We're going to tear it. Now everything that China says, this is tariffed. There's nothing out there that's not. I mean, that was the last fell swoop. So, I mean, if it comes from China, you're paying 25% more for it.
Right.
Just how it works, you know. So now we've got that in place, and then he did say that he thought he could have a winner of a deal put together by June 1st, which is 2 weeks away. But in typical Trump fashion, when you're looking at this at this whole thing, we've been 2 weeks away from a deal since last February. So I mean, it's a lot of things going on there. But I don't know. I think we'd kind of be in a similar boat right now if there weren't no tariffs in place. Is it easy to say that, yeah, well, this, that, and the other thing is what's causing this, and it's the tariffs that's bringing it down even further? Maybe, but I still feel like that we'd be similar boat that we're in now.
I don't know. You know, you look at our economy and how well it's going, and things are going well. I had a coworker the other day tell me, he made this comment, Chad Kilstead. He said, can you imagine what our economy would be doing if the ag economy was helping? You know that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of truth to that. You know, this whole tariff thing. You know, good, bad, and different. I tend to agree that things would probably still be where they're at, even without the tariffs. Probably not as hard for the guys with the soybeans and some of that stuff going on. But our economy is doing pretty good. You just wish that the farmers would not have to have that uncertainty. I mean, we all know.
Yep.
When there's uncertainty, you can't plan, you don't invest, you can't think long term, you're worried about your bills, you're worried about your loans, those types of things. So that's bad. And you sort of want the tariff thing to settle. You know, the thing is, you know, when the tariffs do, and a deal will get done. I mean, Trump needs it for his election.
Absolutely.
China needs it. At the end of the day, they need us. We need them. But, you know, even when it does settle, I don't think there's going to be this huge, on the equipment side of it at least, we think there's going to be this huge bump or this huge rush to go buy equipment. I mean, there's a replacement demand out there for sure. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of people in debt. And it'd be nice to get some commodity prices going up. Maybe sell some stock or some stuff that they have in storage, but I think that just takes care of some past debt, maybe eliminates a bit of stress. But I don't anticipate, you know, a huge run on equipment. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I mean, like you said, there's a replacement kind of air out there. You know, guys are looking at their equipment. They've had it since 2012, 13, 14, something like that, and they've got twice as many hours on it that would normally have this at this particular juncture and where they would be at. But on the other side too, there's also a big repayment push out there as well. I mean, some of these guys, I'm not going to say that everyone's behind because that's not true, but from an equity standpoint, there's a lot of folks out there that are hanging by a thread when it comes to what their bank's willing to do with them because of their equity positions and different stuff, you know. So
You look at the debt to asset ratio. I think going down 5-6 years now, it's been on the rise. I mean, just because there's a bump in commodity prices doesn't mean it wipes away the past 5 years.
No, and I look at when I'm looking at the end of the year, I really feel like we're going to see a big jump in corn prices. I mean, I think we could have 450 corn by this fall, just because of, I mean, look at what's going on right now with weather. I mean, look what happened yesterday in the markets, right? So today we're recording this. It's May 14th. So yesterday we had a 20, almost a 20 cent reversal from the low Sunday night till the close and what opened back up last night. So we had 20 cent swing. So we went, at one point corn was down 7.5, I think.
Yeah.
In the December contract, and this morning last night when I went to bed, I looked at my alert for when it opened, and it was up 7.50. You know what I mean? So it was, you know, you take a look at that. That's a huge swing in the marketplace, man. That's, you're talking about dynamically just flipping completely around to the other way, and those are the kind of things I think we're going to start seeing now as we start looking at this weather market that's developing. I mean, where are you at? You're up in South Dakota, right?
No, I'm up in North Dakota. Up in North Dakota.
North Dakota. Okay.
West Fargo, North Dakota today.
West Fargo. Okay. So, what's the weather like up there? How's the ground temperature? What's going on up there?
Well, I will tell you this: as far as you know, tight machinery is in a few states. As far as our footprint goes, you know, Nebraska. Of course, you know Nebraska well. But up here in North Dakota, you know, we got guys talking about PP. We got May 20th is our deadline for corn, and you got some guys that haven't planted a seed yet. And then we had a nice day yesterday, a little bit nice day today, but now we got rain coming in, and you're talking almost an inch and a half, 2 inches of rain. So now you're looking at the end of next week or middle of next week before you get in the field, and now the corn becomes not an option.
Right.
You know, so then you go to plant beans, but we all know what's going on with beans, but you do anticipate, well, the thing about beans, we just got, even if you do get some beans in and the commodity price, I mean, there's just so much volume out there. You can't plant wheat, you know, we're too late for wheat. So you just get more and more of the PP talk going on.
That's the thing, too, you look at. That's the other part of that. All right, so my anticipation this year was, you know what, we're going to, because there's nothing the farmer loves to do more than farm, right? That's why they're a farmer. You take a look at what's going on. Their options are so limited once you get outside of the corn window, right? You start, I'm going to go out and plant 2,500 acres worth of soybeans right now. You're giving them away at that point. You know, we had beans are under $8 yesterday. And then figuring basis and everything else, you're $7.50, $7.40 a bushel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't make any money at that right now.
There was a conversation I had the other day. A farmer needed, his banker told him he needed 47 bushels an acre across his entire farm just to break even. And that's on beans. I mean, because he's getting too late in corn. Okay, now you got to switch to beans. And it's just tough. It's almost as bad as, you know, talking about beans and corn, and you talk about the dairy guys, you know, for how many years.
Oh, God bless them. Yeah.
How many years do they work sun up to sun down and not make a penny?
That's right.
And with that being said, that's one of the reasons why you love this industry. There's just the work ethic of our industry is bar none.
Yeah, it's such a passionately driven business. You know what I mean? Like, where else would you go and kill yourself every day, a day in and day out, to make a few pennies? You know what I mean? And do what they do. It's just. But on the flip side of that, there's times they go in and bust their ass day in and day out, like 2012, 13, 14. Basically 2006 to 2013, and I mean they haven't every farm had a Brinks truck backing up to it. You know what I mean? But it's just a cyclical thing, right? It's like any other natural resource.
Yeah.
You got booms and you got busts, and unfortunately we're at the bottom of a trough anyway.
Well, we're you're talking about the bottom of the trough. I mean we've been at the lower end of that trough, or I think we've reached the bottom. I don't think we can go down any farther. You don't see interest rates jumping to the roof over the next couple of years. You anticipate some China situation being solved. But, I mean, our overall blocking and tackling, our overall dynamics of our economy, I feel that we're on our way up. We're not hedging our bets about going lower. I think our used equipment values, you know, we're in the used equipment business. We're not seeing those drops like we have in the past.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, there's pretty gosh darn, it's going to, I don't want to say that you're going to have this huge bump. I mean, but it's, I made a comment to you about back to the new normal. You know, that steady flow of transactions, I think, will occur. I just don't think there'll be that. You talked about the boom a minute ago. There's not going to be a boom. I mean, it's going to be a 5 to 10 year trough to get back to. I still will not use the word boom. I just think it's a steady flow of transactions.
You know, it's the one thing about the seed companies. They've gone up in order to increase their market share and to sell more product and to increase stock values and stuff like that. Once the United States had become a very mature market, and Canada, for that matter, have become mature markets, you know, you look at two places, they started looking outside of that and trying to figure out how to how to increase their market share. And the easiest way for them to do that were to start looking at other countries. And you start seeing countries like Brazil come online and countries like Argentina come online. And you start looking at what's happening in Africa. And what their biggest limiting factor is infrastructure, right? So once that infrastructure thing gets put in place, then all of a sudden you've got this huge, I mean, we have a global market now, but if you have everybody had a similar infrastructure to what the U.S. has, even though we have our issues with age and those different things like that, could you imagine what the market would look like then? I mean, it would give
it would not be
it would take off and go crazy. No, it wouldn't be. But I think on the bigger grand scale scheme of things, if you take a look at the number of U.S. farmers that we have right now, and Canadian farmers for that matter, and what that looks like, that number, you know, I looked at a report the other day from the USDA. Pretty sure it's USDA. Anyway, saw a report someplace, but it was talking about the overall farm structure, and they have a pretty old kind of model. You know, anything over 2,000 acres is a huge mega farmer, right? Well, that's a pretty vast group when you get above 2,000 acres, right?
I don't know if I can classify that as a big farmer, but nowadays, keep going.
That's exactly right. So, but the big part about that was interesting was that it was on the ends that were growing, right? It was the large 5,000-6,000 plus acre farmer that was growing, mm-hmm. and then it was the on the other side of that it was the 100-250 acre type stuff that was growing on the other side, the rural lifestyle hobby farmer type thing, you know, weekend warrior type of deal growing on the other side. So if you take that the other side, the big tracts of land that these guys are coming up against, we're seeing in our area where you've got guys that are, and it's not so much that they're going out of business, that's not true, but the guy's retiring, and as he retires, he's looking at his $750,000 or $1 million worth of land and equipment and everything else that he can auction off and retire on. Even if he were to have son or daughter come back into the operation, there's not enough there to maintain that family that's coming in and also pay for dad's retirement. And I think that's getting to be a bigger deal. It has, and it's really not the farm failure thing that's growing. Yeah, you read a lot of articles about, you know, bankruptcies and this, that, and the other stuff that you hear from, like, the KC Fed and those kind of things like that. But I think, in my opinion, it's just there's not enough for multiple people to operate off. Are you seeing something similar in your area?
I would agree there. I mean, you can't, you hear about the kids coming back home and there's just not enough, as you just said, not enough there to support that family. And then the brother or the sister and the grandma and grandpa, the dad's retirement, there's just not enough there. The margins are so slim, you know, and then you try to get more land to try to increase that volume per se. Then along with that comes the expenses. There's just not enough there to support multiple generations on a farm. But that, you know, that leads into diversification. I think farming will continue to evolve just like it always has. You know, they made a comment a minute ago about how much I love this industry. They always find a way. You know, you have no money, you find a way to repair. You need a piece of equipment or you need a new way to put a seed in the ground, they find a way. And just like they'll find different crops to grow. They'll find a different way to have different revenue streams into the farm. There might be more niche stuff going on. There might be different crops in the corn, bean, and soybeans, or excuse me, the corn, bean, and wheat. So, I mean, heck, you hear stories about how people start a fish farm, you know?
Yeah, and those things are popping up in the most
unusual areas.
Unusual areas. You know, you think the South, you know, has been always growing catfish and those kind of things, but you're talking about guys up in my area. There's aquaculture up here. There are people up in North and South Dakota. All you really need is a barn to keep stuff warm, and you can kind of grow fish about any time of the year, I guess.
You know, we just talked a minute ago about the people finding a way. You know, you talk about these autonomous vehicles. I think one of your podcasts talked about can't get any bigger on equipment, and we can't. I mean, the roadways don't support it. You don't have enough labor. You don't have enough time in the day. You know, you have to think of these autonomous vehicles and go with smaller equipment. I mean, that's might be the way of the future, or not. Might be. It will be the way of the future.
Yeah, there's a big push right now on the farm labor side of stuff, and it's that's why we have 54 row planters. You know what I mean? It's not so much the labor side of it, but it's these tight windows that we see, right?
Correct. Yeah.
You know, a guy's got 7 days of planting and on bookend by 7 days of rain on both sides of that. You got to make the most out of those 3 or 4 days that you have to actually go out and plant something. You know what I mean? And you watch Twitter and everything else, and you start seeing these guys look at their monitors, and they're planting 120 acres an hour. Well, my neck of woods, that's a circle, right? You plant one circle an hour, you got 40 circles in 40 hours, you're done,
right?
And that's what used to take 2 or 3 weeks to do now takes you, if you really get after it, it might take you 3 or 4 days to get it done.
Yeah. I mean, you look at today's May 14th. Again, talking to a different farmer here 2 days ago, it's May 14th. He hasn't planted a single corn seed. And it's May 14th. Well, yesterday was May 13th. Windows May 20th. So you got 7 days. It's going to rain 3-4 of those 7 days. And he still hasn't made the decision not to plant corn because he has a big enough planter to where he could run out for 2 or 3 days and get most of his corn crop in. So, to your point, the bigger equipment. But I just think long term, you can't get equipment that's, you don't want to say you can't, but it's not very efficient just to get bigger and bigger and bigger equipment.
Well, the other side of that, too, when you start taking a look at a planter, for example, let's just use that, let's stay on that topic for a minute. Well, you see these stuff out here where they've got, like, I saw one the other day where a guy had, I want to say it was a 54 row, might have been a DB120 or something like that. But, you know, you have two central commodity fuel stations on that thing, and you've got all this stuff going on, plus you're pulling a big, huge fertilizer tank behind it and just... It's a goddamn train just going down the road, man. I mean, it's you know, when you get it all put together. Hey, we had a guy the other day move his planter from his farm to his northern end of his farming territory, and he had to get a crane truck to move his trailer. It's 79 feet long so we didn't have a trailer that could move it.
That's,
you know, so it was just stuff efficient. Like that.
That's not efficient.
No,
that's not. You're not making. You don't want to say you're not making money. There's a reason why he does it, but you can't have equipment that big. And you talk about equipment that big, and how many farmers can afford it? Number one,
right?
But it's 2-3 years down the road when you want to go trade it off from an equipment dealership point of view. Who the hell are we going to sell it to?
Exactly right. It's exactly right, because the guy that's going to buy that planter. I'm not going to sit here and say, I'm not going to paint with a broad brush and say that they're only a new buyer, but they're probably going to buy new, right?
Correct.
So, you know, you're not going to have a lot of used guys, you know, the smaller acreage guys going like, you know what, I got 4,000 acres, you know, I could plant in about 72 hours and be done with this thing. No one's thinking like that, right? I mean, yeah, they are like, it'd be great to have something like that, but then once you get a piece of equipment like that, the other side of that coin is, all the support equipment that you have to make it run efficiently.
Correct.
You know what I mean? How many seed tenders do you need to have? How many trucks you got to have? How many, you know, all just on and on and on. Just like getting a bigger combine. You know, you go from a class 7 to a class 9 combine. Well, all of a sudden, now you need a head. You don't need a 35-foot head. You need a 45-foot head to make it run efficiently and do what you need to do and make it feed properly and everything else. Now you need an extra truck, or you need an extra grain cart, or an extra tractor. I mean, it's just a bigger and bigger deal, and that's the thing that when you start talking about those kind of things, it's not so much the, you know, hey, we're gonna just get a bigger combine. I'm gonna get a bigger combine, but I'm also gonna have to do X, Y, and Z to keep up with it. Otherwise, you're really doing the same amount you had with your class 7, class 8 combine.
Correct. Bigger just creates more problems. But you know, I'll repeat the statement. We've always figured out a way, and they'll continue to figure out a way to farm.
Yep. Yeah, it's gonna continue down that road. So let's talk about a few pieces of equipment right now. My biggest concern I have in the marketplace right now, and it's always my biggest concern, if you listen to this podcast, you know it's my biggest concern, it's combines. And you look at the we track combines and where they how they fit into the overall grand scheme picture, and it looks like the used combine inventory is growing across North America. Across all lines. So what are you seeing up your way, and how do you feel about that market?
Combines, we're in a little bit different boat. Just the stores can't complement our stores high enough and the discipline that they've done. We're actually short combines. We know that there's that bubble, 11, 12, 13, 14s. We all know it. They all hold on. They're held onto the combines longer than they normally would have. There's just that bubble where everybody had money. Everybody went out and bought an extra combine or two, and they're all sitting out there. I'm not saying that we're not worried about combines. We are. But we're actually short combines. And I think red, green, whatever, we're all short the 16, 17, 18 models just because there wasn't enough production.
Yeah.
But we are concerned about combines that, again, those 11 through 14s, four-wheel drives, surprisingly. We had a little bit of win there, or a little bit of run there at the end of the year, first start of the year. But four-wheel drive inventory is a bit of concern, just a little bit slow moving. But we got some, there's some pockets there, Casey, that, you know, good. They moved, you can go trade it in. You're helping out that farmer that wants to upgrade because we need his piece. I mean, there's not a better position for a farmer than when a dealership is coming out to that dealer or that farmer and saying, hey, we need your piece because I got a home for it over here. It's a perfect solution for that guy trading in, perfect solution for that guy looking for something. So there are some pockets that we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, and that's where I'm the same with you on your combine analogy there. I have a same thing. If we had, you know, the 18s and the 17s and the 16s, I think we have those machines and we've got a lot of people working on those. We start kind of getting into, you know, the little bit of the 15s, mostly the 14s and the 13s and the 12s. That's when you really start seeing a big swing in the overall market, and that's where that tightening. I mean, they're just like that, at that point, those machines, excuse me, those machines have become very much a commodity. They're just because there's so many of them. And you want a 1,500-hour combine, well, you got a lot to pick from. But the part of our problem, and I think a lot of people's problem is this, is that everyone's got a 1,500-hour combine they want to trade in. And that's where we're running into the biggest hurdle.
But if we know that going into it, I mean, us dealerships, yes, you want the business, okay? We've been through the ups. We've been through the downs. We went through, I mean, the history is still pretty fresh as far as 13, 14, and 15, and the purge of equipment that we've had to go through. I mean, the pain is still fresh. But knowing that, one thing us dealerships hopefully will recognize is that model years of 12, 13, 14s, we talked maybe a little bit of 11s too. I mean, it is a commodity. And treat it as such, buy it as such. And gosh darn, if you don't have a home for it, and or if you're not already at auction prices, then don't do the deal. No matter how bad we want that fresh new sale, I mean, if the dynamics don't work, the economics don't work, it doesn't work.
Right. What's your thought on this right here? So this is something I've been giving some thought to, and I think as commodity prices come up, like you said, there's that replacement factor that's playing in there. How much of a factor in could we see in the end of the year with those year model combines, those 13, 14, 11s model combines out there? How much of a factor do you think that could play in the overall retail marketplace if we kind of hit that. Well, we have no really our best option for these combines is the auction block, irregardless of whether you have them at auction price or not. But how much of an effect on the retail market do you see that happen? There will be this huge. I think there's going to be a huge premium for that. That 1 and 2 and 3 year old stuff. It's when you get to that 5, 6, 7 year old stuff that we're starting to see out there pile up now. There's going to make some kind of splash in the marketplace. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a tough one. I don't think you can buy them low enough. I mean, to put it bluntly, there's just not enough. There's not enough farmers. I mean, if you have a $1,500 machine or a $2,000 machine and you want to go trade it in and your only option is another $1,500, $2,000 machine, I mean, it makes no sense. You know?
Right.
So then it will go to the auctions. I don't know if you mentioned about the recon business, but, I mean, could you buy a combine cheap and put 30, 40 grand into it and have a combine that will last you? You know, you always look at your cost per acre, cost per hour, and it might make sense to buy an older combine and fix it up and run it for the X number of hours rather than going out and buying that $400,000 new one. People will find a way to adapt. I just feel that there's going to be too much, whether it be tractors, whether it be combines, more specifically combines and corn heads. There's just too much in the marketplace for the industry or for the consumer base to absorb it. The farmers have to be aware of it. The dealerships have to be aware of it, and act appropriately.
Yeah, I hope my hunch is right. I hope a lot of these older combines like this are the ones that we can market as, you know, cheap leases or something like that, where you're looking at 60 to 80 bucks an hour to operate these things, and they become a secondary machine, you know, backup machine. I you know, the typical, I want to rent a combine every year type stuff. Well, our rental rate versus what they can lease them for are significantly higher. You know what I mean? Our rental rate is compared to what these are. So hopefully we can do that.
You look at the lease side of it, though. Leasing's not an option on the older combines just because at the end of the lease, it's older than 10 years old. There might be an opportunity you just mentioned as far as a rental thing, but my experience with rentals is no matter what rent that you collect, it never pays for the recon necessary to resell it.
I thought I was the only one that had that problem. I didn't realize it was a universal deal there.
I think it happens on the red side, too.
Yeah, that renting thing, I mean, it's a good service to the customers, and I understand why we do it, and it is what it is, and I'm glad that we do that, but at the end of the day, it makes it hard.
There is an opportunity there, though, you know, as far as bigger farmers need equipment here, if you do it right, manage it right, set it up right, have your rules in place, I do think there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, I do too. I think, but it's like any other. That's why I like the construction companies have done such a great job in the rental side. It's rental utilization, right? And you take a wheel loader or something like that, you can run that thing 365 days a year, 24/7, right? No big deal. Combine, you've got, if you're lucky, I mean, and you run it every single solitary day that you could possibly run it, you might have 90 days, 120 days, maybe. You know?
I wasn't quite that high, but you're right. I mean, you talk about combine rentals, you look at some of the companies, MachineryLink being one in particular, that ran them from Texas, you know, all the way up to the north here. They had two runs at it, two different versions of what they tried to accomplish, and they could not make it work. It's renting combines is just a tough deal. Like renting a tractor, renting some other piece of equipment, a little bit more, not as high of a risk. It's just that combine thing is a tough deal.
Yep. The combine deal works if you can have you leave one farm and then you just drive down the road and drop it off at the next farm. You drive down the road and drop it off at the next farm. We try to do something similar like that, where you've, and different places that I've worked, we've tried to do that, where you've done the, we're going to start at the very southern end of our territory and work north, and we'll have whatever, however many combines, and it just doesn't work. You don't get the fluidness that you, on paper it's great, man. It works great on paper. I can tell you that much, but when you actually have to implement it in real life, it doesn't work so well.
So like my golf game, man, it looks great on paper, but the reality of my golf game is a completely different thing.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you on that one. Okay. All right, one more thing. Let's talk about this, and then we'll wrap it up. All right, so as you look out towards the end of the year and you see what's happening now, we're headed into the spring here is about done. The spring planting season is kind of like you talked about wrapping up here and headed towards the end. What's your overall feel for the end of 2019, going into harvest, those kind of things? What's your feel for the economy?
Oh, you know, I think it's just steady as it goes. I don't think there's going to be a huge bump, even if the China thing, you know, when they meet on the 20th or whatever in June, I think there might be a lot of rhetoric going on to see who's bigger, and they might come to a grandiose deal come the 20th of June or something like that. But I just think that initial bump of when the tariffs, if it does end, I think there'll be an initial bump, but overall the basics of the economy are pretty good. I don't see a big windfall of anything. I see discipline. I see steady as it goes. Grab an opportunity here or there, but don't get carried away, and just execute. I guess I don't see a big movement in things.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think if we do get something happens with China and we get something, something will happen with China before the summer's over.
I promise you that. I agree.
You know, whether we win or we lose and they want to try to spend it on whatever, something's going to happen going into the 2020 election cycle. I guarantee you.
I guarantee both sides will say they won.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it will be, see, we won it. We win it for you, America. Good job. And then you won't be able to tell heads from tails on what it was. But at the end of the day, I think the weather is going to have a bigger splash in the market than the tariffs ever will. I mean, tariffs are going to bring that stabilization to the market, but the swings that we see, the volatility where money can be made, is going to happen from the weather. So, I've had Sean Hackett on here last time, normal Wednesday guest, talking about the markets, but he follows sunspots and how that affects the weather and all those kind of things, and the stuff he talks about. So I mean, it happens. There's no we can't deny any of that stuff from happening. So if we are in that cycle that he was describing in 134, if you get a chance to go back and take a listen to it, but this weather thing is going to be an issue moving forward. You know, we're going to talk about, it's just going to get harder and harder, and there's going to be more and more, crop failures and stuff like we're seeing now and those kind of things taking place. So at the end of the day, I look out the end of 2019, and I'm a little bit bullish. But I think any real economic push that we see in agriculture is going to be in 2020. It's not going to be in 2019. A little bit towards the end of the year, but the big kind of budding of this new flower that we call farming is going to happen in 2020 on forward. So
that's kind of my
approach.
I would agree with as far as, I mean, it's going to take a while for we talked a little bit about the debt, a little bit about eliminating or minimizing that stress level that's been building. And it'll just take a while for our emotions to work through it. And I would agree 2020 would be more of a uptick than anything here in 2019.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Don, it's a great conversation as usual. We're going to have a couple opportunities here this year to see each other face to face. I'm looking forward to that, catching up with you and doing all that fun stuff.
See you at the end of July. And I'm going to end you by the comment I made at the beginning of the podcast, in the words of Casey Seymour, There is no easy button.
Well, I appreciate that, buddy. And Don, if folks want to reach out to you and ask you questions, or maybe sell you some more red combines since you're running low, how would they do that?
My friend, anything 16, 17, 18, you guys give me a call. You can reach Don Auberly at 701-356-0130. You can always email me at donald.auberly@titanmachinery.com.
Right on. Okay. Well, Don, always a pleasure, man. Love talking to you. Love catching up with you. So until I see you here in July, have a good rest of the spring here, and we'll talk to you then, bud.
All right, buddy. Take care, Casey.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at movingironpodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit movingironllc.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and globalagnetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour, out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years you'll find a scene.